This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. When the petrochemical plant being built by Shell in Beaver County is complete, it's anticipated to bring 600 jobs as well as spinoff industries. But as the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports, some researchers and activists warn that it could also bring a new type of pollution to the Ohio Valley. Nurdles. The story is part of Good River, a series about the environment, economy, and culture of the Ohio River.
Before last year, Jace Tunnell, director of the Marine Science Institute at the University of Texas at Austin, had only heard of nurdles, tiny plastic pellets the size of a lentil made at petrochemical plants. They're the raw material of the plastics industry, the building blocks of everything from car parts to keyboards to grocery store bags. But walking along the beach at Corpus Christi, Texas in 2018 was the first time he saw one.
At first, I wasn't sure. They fish eggs. When I picked one up and squeezed it, it was really hard. I knew exactly what that was. It was a nurdle.
That day on the beach, it was unbelievable to tunnel thousands of pellets, maybe more, all along the tide line.
So I was kind of in shock.
Tunnell wanted to know more, how many of these were really washing up on the shores of the Texas Gulf Coast. So he started a citizen science project.
This is Nurdle Patrol Training 101.
This is a video explaining how to survey a beach. Tunnell randomly starts looking along the tide line.
Here's one right here.
Once a nurdle is found, participants search for 10 minutes and input their tally into Nurdle Patrol's database. Boy Scout troops, families, and others have done surveys along the Gulf Coast.
What we've learned since is that, you know, almost every single beach that you go to has pellets on it.
Plastic pellets break down into smaller pieces, but they never fully go away. And over time, nurdles just keep accumulating.
And so with more cracker plants expanding or starting up, we're just going to see more of these showing up on our beaches.
Cracker plants, like the one Shell is building in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, use the ethane in natural gas, now abundant because of fracking, to make plastic pellets. Plastic production is ramping up nationally. More than 300 projects like this have been announced in the past decade. Each year, Shell's plant alone will produce nearly 1.6 million metric tons of plastic pellets. That's trillions of nurdles annually.
Once this facility is up and running, people will start to see tiny little bits of plastic, these nurdles that are lining the waterways where the stormwater drains into.
Emily Jeffers is an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity.
Once you see them, you're going to see millions of them.
It's easy for these tiny, lightweight pellets to escape. Millions are loaded into trucks, trains, and ships for transport and easily spill. When it rains, spilled nurdles can wash into waterways, and it makes Jeffers worry about wildlife.
For example, birds, fish, and other species, they'll eat those tiny particles of plastic thinking they're food, and then they'll stop eating because they think they're not hungry. And so they starve to death as a result of eating plastics.
Research has not determined what this means for humans who eat fish that have consumed plastic. The Center for Biological Diversity submitted a petition to the U.S. EPA, supported by 280 environmental, public health, indigenous, and community groups around the country. It calls for an update to federal regulations to specifically prohibit discharge of nurdles into waterways.
First off, let's remember that this material is very valuable. It's something that our members want to keep control over it.
This is Keith Christman. He's head of plastics markets for the American Chemistry Council, a trade group that runs Operation Clean Sweep. It's a voluntary stewardship program for plastic makers.
Our goal is to move towards zero pellet loss to the environment. There are good housekeeping practices that are part of Operation Clean Sweep that catches any material that might fall on the ground, sweeps it up, vacuums it up, and prevents it from getting into the environment.
Shell is a member of Operation Clean Sweep. In an email, the company says it's pledged to prevent accidental loss of plastic pellets. In addition to this voluntary effort, Christman says EPA has rules intended to prevent pollution like nurdles.
It is already regulated through the Clean Water Act and stormwater permits. So this material and loss of it at a facility is regulated already.
But Emily Jeffers says the rules were written before the current growth of plastics manufacturing.
Yes, there are standards right now. They're just woefully out of date.
According to an EPA spokesperson, the federal agency is considering the petition to update its standards. Meanwhile, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection has issued water pollution permits for the Shell ethane cracker. In an email, the agency points to Shell's permit that limits the discharge of floating materials like nurdles in the plant's stormwater in amounts that could be harmful to humans or wildlife. But those amounts are not defined, and this is a problem for Jace Tunnell, who sees similar language in Texas permits.
That actually allows them to release nurdles into the environment legally. And so that's what needs to be changed, is we need to have zero pellet loss put into the stormwater permits of these manufacturing facilities.
DEP's email states the agency is not considering adding a zero pellet loss requirement. Plus, it says Shell's designs for the plant, quote, eliminate the risk of nurdle spillage and loss. And if pellets were getting into the water, the agency would restrict or eliminate the discharge. In Ohio, the state EPA last year approved water pollution permits for another ethane cracker along the Ohio River, southeast of Pittsburgh near Wheeling. In an email, that agency described similar stormwater rules and plant designs. And Keith Chrisman with Operation Clean Sweep says it's providing a new upgraded program to its members, including Shell, to keep better track of pellet loss.
We'll submit data to state regulatory agencies on the amount of pellets lost to the environment.
But Jace Tunnell, the Texas researcher, recommends that before the petrochemical plants start operating in Pennsylvania and Ohio, people use his Nurdle Patrol protocol to survey the nearby waters to get a baseline on the number of nurdles they find.
I would go out and start collecting data. Even zeros are data.
He says showing no nurdles on the banks of the Ohio River now can be a powerful tool to hold industry accountable later. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
That story is part of a series, Good River, produced by 7 nonprofit newsrooms. More stories at ohiowatershed.org. Us and Them host Trey Kay talked recently with Bob Garfield. He's co-host of the NPR program On the Media. Garfield is also co-founder of an initiative called the Purple Project for Democracy. Its goal is to help people believe in democracy once again and show them ways to get involved and re-engage.
Bob, as you know, my show is called Us and Them. And I know that you're very familiar with that us and them dynamic, that we, us, are the good guys and that we're trustworthy and we're righteous. And them, those people, are the people we can't trust and they're the cause of all of our problems. How does this sense of us and them play into the erosion of democracy?
The more polarized we become, the more polarized we are destined to become, unless there's some intervening event, like a terrorist attack or a war or some other, generally a catastrophe that brings the country together. But the prognosis for polarization is usually more polarization. And it's obviously destructive, but the thing about in us and them is that there are an us and a them. There are different ways of perceiving the world. I mean, I finally learned that lesson 25 years ago or so in the OJ trial, when, like most white Americans, I got the verdict and I went, what? What the? What? And most black Americans are going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, because they finally saw reflected in a court verdict the reality that they live every day.
You know, as you mentioned that, I was working in a New York law firm. And as I walked through the halls of this white shoe New York law firm, you could have heard a pin drop. And I took some documents down to the duplicating department, which was mostly black and Hispanic people. And it was like a party going on, two different realities. And in a way, you're saying that those two different realities are kind of what we are experiencing right now in America.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, I don't think it's it's a perfect analog, but I think it's pretty close. And each side of the sort of red and blue divide feels righteous. Each side feels aggrieved. Each side feels that it has been imposed upon, and that it's has unjustly been marginalized. I mean, it's amazing. The set of grievances are kind of identical. And what has changed in the last, let's say, 5 years is that the political right has coalesced that grievance into a movement that, you know, we call Trumpism. I'm not sympathetic to the underlying grievances particularly, but I am on a human level sympathetic to a group of people who believe that their values have been trampled upon for, you know, decades, and who feel like they're strangers in their own country. I think they're wrong. I mean, I think liberal democracy and the Bill of Rights are just right, just about right. But I understand how we got to this point.
Is part of the problem of where we are right now, this rancor that we're feeling in the country, does it have to do with the fact that America's longtime dominant majority, white Christians, believe that they're on the verge of becoming a political minority?
Well, I think that's a huge part of it, and the data bear that out, and so do the poll results, and from a strictly demographic point of view, it's true. What isn't true is that somehow by being outnumbered by the many, 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 ethnic cohorts of that have always been part of America, that they are somehow marginalized in the society and the culture. Just not true. The people who most fear that are the people least exposed to the consequences of the changing demographics of the country. What they are exposed to is maybe having a black supervisor at work, maybe, you know, not being able to squeeze the butt of a colleague or tell a dirty joke, which, you know, you tell a joke and you wind up, tell a dirty joke that you told 20 years ago, and everybody's, you're something, you're a caution, Bill. And now you're in HR, right? All of a sudden you're in some sort of sensitivity training, and it just, you seethe, because it's not just society reckoning with historic institutional structural bias. No, it's you. We're telling you you're not good enough. And, you know, I'm no psychologist. In fact, there's a number of things that I hold forth on that I'm not an expert in, but I know that's got to write smart. So the notion of purple it's really a marketing idea. To put a brand to awareness, inspiration, and participation in the value of democracy. And thereby to strengthen democracy by encouraging participation in the process. Whether that means canvassing for a candidate or testifying before the zoning hearing board or running for U.S. Senate, there are a lot of ways to participate. And complacency and bitterness are the forces, not polarization, that are most likely to destroy American democracy. And we have to turn that around. And of course, we have a plan.
That's Bob Garfield, host of the NPR program On the Media. He talked with Us and Them host Trey Kay about an initiative he's helped create called the Purple Project for Democracy. To hear Trey's entire interview with Bob Garfield, you can download the Us and Them podcast from iTunes, Stitcher, NPR One, or Radio Public. You can also listen online at wvpublic.org. Look for the We the Purple episode. This is West Virginia Morning.